So let's head now to the United States, where the new year brings elections for the House of Representatives and a third of the US Senate. US correspondent Simon Marks joins us now. Happy New Year, Simon.
And the same to you, Megan. Happy New Year to everyone there.
It's still New Year's Day your time, isn't it?
It is. We're still basking in the holiday that is New Year's Day. And in Washington, D.C., it is absolutely bone-chillingly cold. I can't remember a day as cold as this for a number of years. So we're sitting by the fire and trying to huddle.
So I mentioned this year is an election year in the U.S. The whole House of Representatives and a third of the Senate will be up for grabs towards the end of the year in November. But President Trump is already campaigning.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that's a very clear sign, Megan, that, you know, the midterm elections here in the United States, the legislature, the House of Representatives, and one third of the Senate up for grabs in November, that's going to be the dominant political story here in the United States. And as Donald Trump indicated, even before the stroke of midnight on New Year's Eve, he is already in full campaign mode. He took to Twitter from Florida, where he's been spending the Christmas holiday, to say that it was unbelievable to him that any smart voters would back the Democrats this coming November and risk the economic recovery that he insists he has put into practice and put into force since he became president just under a year ago. And this, I think, was a very clear indication that Donald Trump is loaded, locked and ready for what is going to be a bruising political campaign here, and a campaign that, to all intents and purposes, will serve as a referendum on his presidency. I mean, these will be local elections, because, of course, every member of the House of Representatives and the Senate comes from one of America's 50 states, and they will be fighting for re-election on local issues. But I think no analysts here are in any doubt that this November will be the first time real voters will have gone into the voting booth en masse since Donald Trump became president and be given their opportunity to express their views on his activities as president and the Republican Party's support for him.
We saw towards the end of last year a couple of what we in New Zealand would call by-elections that went to the Democrats. Are they, do you think, an indication of what's to come?
Well, I think the Democrats are daring to dream. They may also be reading a little bit too much into those special election victories. There were big victories, of course, in Alabama, the Senate race, although the situation there was very unusual, given that the Republican candidate backed by Donald Trump, Roy Moore, was beleaguered by allegations regarding his personal behavior over many years in Alabama. But the Democrats won that race fair and square, and it's a huge win for them. A Democrat in the Senate from the state of Alabama is an extreme rare species here in the United States. They also took comfort from the results of special elections that were held in Virginia, in New Jersey, in Connecticut, and in some cases, there's no question those were stunning results for the Democrats. And yet, if you look, for example, at the governor's race in Virginia, the Democrat won, but the Republican vote in that state, in that race, appeared to hold up. But, you know, there's no question that the Democrats, after 12 months of battling everything that Donald Trump has been doing, believe that the results of those elections at least lay the groundwork for them to dare to think that they might win control of the House and the Senate when the November votes are all counted.
You mentioned that President Trump tweeted about voters, and he's also launched this morning, our time, a broadside against Pakistan, weighing in also on the Iran protests. So Pakistan first, his tweet caused consternation in Islamabad. What did he actually have to say?
Well, he and it's not clear what provoked this tweet. There was an article in The New York Times a couple of days ago about the Trump administration weighing up whether it's going to make good on promises of $225 million in humanitarian aid for Pakistan, aid that the president moved to the back burner and put on hold last August. There's every indication as a result of this tweet in which Donald Trump said, look, we've given the Pakistanis billions and billions of dollars in aid over the last last 15 years, and all they have done is rewarded us with lies and deceit. The country continues to serve as a terrorist haven, and he said there will be no more. That's a pretty clear indication that that $225 million in humanitarian aid won't be going to Pakistan anytime soon. But it's also a very clear indication that President Trump intends to continue tweeting and engaging in activities that more normally would be conveyed through diplomatic channels, through the channels of his favorite social media site. The Pakistani government has now responded and said that all the United States has delivered to Pakistan is mistrust and invective. So clearly, the relationship between the two sides very cold at the moment. And that, of course, is to India's great advantage. The Indian government will surely be welcoming that very rude exchange of tweets between the president and the Pakistani government as the new year got underway.
I mean, this isn't the first time that the president has used Twitter to conduct his diplomacy. We've seen the same with North Korea.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And he's continued. I mean, even while he's been on holiday these last few days, he's been tweeting about Iran and the protests there, insisting that the Iranian government has done everything possible wrong and that the United States stands with the people of Iran, who, of course, are on the streets there. I mean, critics of the Trump administration will say, well, hang on a second. If you stand with the people of Iran, why on earth are America's borders currently closed to the people of Iran? Because, of course, Iran is one of the countries on the list of countries targeted in the revised version of the president's travel ban that so far the courts have allowed to stand. But again, the overriding message is that Secretary of State Rex Tillerson can take a backseat. I mean, he's dangling by a thread anyway, given the fact that his relationship with Donald Trump is pretty fragile at the moment. But it's a very clear indication that diplomacy by Twitter is going to be a continuing facet of this presidency.
He said over the holidays that he's only just getting started, that Make America Great is happening faster than anyone thought possible. So what, and he's just, his latest tweet is that he'll be leaving Florida for Washington today. Much work to be done, but it will be a great new year. So what does he actually want to achieve in year two?
Yes, it's worth saying he managed to squeeze in another quick trip to the golf course before leaving Florida to head back to Washington, D.C. Look, I mean, I think in domestic terms, as we all know, Donald Trump did succeed in getting his tax bill passed in the dying days of 2017. He has an infrastructure bill that he really wants to get through Congress before the political season kicks into high gear. And the only thing we're talking about is midterm elections. But it's very difficult to see how he gets much more done after that, given that he wasn't able in 2017 to get Obamacare repealed and reformed as he had promised. Highly unlikely that he's going to make very much more headway with that over the next 12 months. He wasn't able to secure funding for the construction of that border wall that he insists he's going to build along the US border with Mexico. I mean, there's a whole host of campaign pledges that he hasn't been able to make good on because he can't secure enough Republican support in the United States Senate, particularly, and sometimes in the House of Representatives, to get these things done. And, you know, if you assume, as many analysts here do, that the Democrats are going to score gains in those midterm elections, even if they don't secure control of the Senate and the House of Representatives, then the legislative outlook for the remaining period of Donald Trump's presidency is bleak. He would be forced to continue doing things through executive orders, continue doing things as a result, for example, of the appointments that he's made at places like the Environmental Protection Agency, where you've now got a climate change skeptic running that absolutely vital government department and rolling back environmental regulations that the Obama administration put into practice. So it's not that he can't get anything done, but it is that he finds it very difficult legislatively to score much success, and the window of opportunity to advance some of these issues may end up getting slammed shut in November.
And all of this takes place with the Russia investigations as a continuing backdrop. Are we close to a final result there?
Well, it depends entirely who you talk to. The White House insists these investigations are wrapping up, but it's far from clear why the White House believes that or how the White House would know that. Robert Mueller's investigation, which, of course, resulted in the indictment of four officials who were involved in the Trump campaign, including securing guilty pleas from two of them, George Papadopoulos, a former foreign policy advisor to President Trump, and, of course, Michael Flynn, the president's first and disgraced national security advisor. That investigation by Robert Mueller doesn't seem to me to be slowing down. Indeed, it seems to be expanding with people much closer to the president's heart, possibly in its crosshairs, including his own son-in-law, Jared Kushner, his own son, Donald Trump Jr. I mean, their activities are coming under very close scrutiny. Now, the Trump administration continues to denigrate what Robert Mueller is doing through various proxies that go on to television here and raise questions about Robert Mueller's political motivation and the fact that so many people on his team gave money to the Democrats during the 2016 election campaign. But, you know, this investigation has been largely leak-proof. It has made substantial advances over 2017. And if it continues to dog the president's footsteps through 2018, and we get to November and the Democrats are in control of Congress, the Democrats would then be in a position to begin impeachment proceedings against President Trump. Now, there's a lot of ifs there. There's a lot of caveats there. But he could find himself in an even bleaker position at the end of 2018 than he was in at the end of 2017.
There are a lot of ifs there. So where are the Democrats as 2018 starts? What can they actually dream of capturing both houses of Congress at the end of this year?
Well, I think that question of where are the Democrats is a very good question, because the Democrats, you know, one of the problems that they face, as you know, this country doesn't have a leader of the opposition. And President Trump has spent a good deal of time in 2017 continuing to attack Hillary Clinton as sort of the Democrats' standard bearer, because he doesn't know who to attack, since he doesn't know who the party will run as its candidate in the 2020 presidential election. Hillary Clinton spent the year writing a book, What Happened, all about her election defeat. There are those here who believe that she thinks she's still got one more presidential race in her.
And Barack Obama, was it Vanity Fair, pleaded with her in a now controversial video not to run again?
Yes, absolutely. And I think one of the issues that she's going to face is that presumably at some point during 2018, Barack Obama, who was pretty silent during 2017, will be out campaigning for Democratic candidates in November's elections. Be interesting to see if they want Hillary to campaign with them. And at some point, Barack Obama is likely to say, look, to Bill and Hillary Clinton, this really isn't your party anymore. This is now my party, and I'm going to be the one who plays a central role in filling seats at the Democratic National Committee and trying to determine who the standard bearer is going to be brave enough to take Donald Trump on and become the next victim of what he's referred to as his beautiful Twitter account. But the Democrats have got work to do over the next 12 months, because by the time you and I are having this conversation next January, Donald Trump will be thinking about whether he's going to run for re-election and seek a second term in the White House, assuming he's still in the White House by the end of the year.
Surely he's already thought about that by now.
I'm sure he's already thought about it. I mean, you know, it's difficult to know. If you look at his character, I think you would have to conclude he's going to run again. He doesn't look like the quitting type to me. On the other hand, he may conclude that he's done what he can do and that he's got Mike Pence's running mate and that maybe it's time to pass the torch. He doesn't strike me necessarily as the torch passing type. But the Democrats also, by this time next year, they're going to have to be deciding who are they running as their presidential candidate. And at the moment, there is no one in Washington. There's literally no political analyst here that can give you any sensible notion of who that candidate may be. I mean, there's clearly going to be a bruising battle between various Democrats who will decide to run, but it's hard even to identify at this point who those might be.
Thanks so much for joining us today, Simon.